first thing I want to do is to show you a little photo of how technology has changed. A lot of what I'm going to talk about tonight and a bit of what Pastor Tim will touch on is that, you know, we've always been influenced by technology in America in particular. But what's different now is the speed with which technology is changing our lives. So this right here, it was the, I guess you say inauguration, I'm not Catholic, of Pope Benedict in 2005. A lot of people staring forward, getting ready to see the ceremony. And that's 2013. Very different experience. Now, on one hand, it's amazing that we have these tools that allow us to share these momentous moments with our friends and family around the world. On the other hand, they are a layer that we have placed in front of ourselves and in front of our ability to be present. You are at one of the most amazing moments in modern history, and you're looking at your iPad. So because I work at Nielsen, which is known for TV ratings as well as powering the Billboard charts and SoundScan, I want to start off with some data. Because you can argue with my personal experience, but facts are a lot harder to argue with, and I love them. Oh, wait, but first, a quote that I forgot I put up here. Okay, there's nothing new under the sun. And then from the book I Disorder by Larry Rosen, obsession with technology started with radio in the 30s and with television in the 60s, but has recently exploded in importance during the current digital age. So this right here is the first image I want you to look at. It shows how long it took each mode of technology to reach 50 million users. It took radio 38 years, TV 13, internet 4, Facebook 3.5, and the Draw Something app reached 50 million users in 50 days. Now, 50 million may sound like a lot to you, but when I worked at Twitter, we didn't consider ourselves even moderately successful until we reached at least 200 million users. And then once you reach 200, it's like, well, how can we get to 400 million by the end of this year? That's how technology and startups think of success today. Down here, you look at the media consumption of the average American today. We're on our phones almost 2 hours a day. I bet it's more than that. TV, 1.5, PC, 1.6, and other media, 2.1, for a total of 7 hours a day. You're supposed to be working 8 hours a day as well, so I'm sure that's a mix of actually working and then checking Facebook. Now, on an individual level, this is some information from the Pew Research. This was done in 2012. I would wager that the numbers are a lot higher now. 67% of cell phone owners check their phones constantly, even when they don't notice it ringing. Who does that? No one here. 44% of their cell owners have slept with their phone next to them in bed because they want to make sure they don't miss anything. Nobody here does that, right? Nobody. And then 29% of cell phone owners describe their cell phone as, quote, something they can't imagine living without. Have you ever left your phone at home when you went to go out with friends and it feels like you're missing a limb? If you don't feel that way, you probably do not use your phone as often as I do, because I feel really strange when I don't have my phone with me, because it's become an extension of who I am. And I'll get more into my experience a little bit later. First, I wanted to talk about the basic utility. And a lot of my focus and my talk is going to be on mobile and social, because that's been the background of my experience. I'm not an engineer. I am not an entrepreneur. I'm primarily a digital strategist and a marketing level, as well as someone who's now in sales and branding as well. So we know that social media is amazing for news. Whenever I think I feel an earthquake or there's helicopters going over my neighborhood, I don't turn on the TV. I go on Twitter and immediately start searching, because I find I get information quicker that way. Creativity. You know, for those of you who are musicians in the room, I am as well. We saw our entire world revolutionize over the past 20 years. We had to learn Pro Tools. We had to see many new forms of technology develop. And then we could use tools like Kickstarter and Indiegogo to fund our campaigns. The same with filmmakers and others. When I was in college, I remember them teaching us how to print photos in the lab for my photojournalism course, and my teacher said, this is probably not going to matter in 2 years because this digital thing is happening. And he was right. Many of the photographers that I went on to work with as a journalist never printed a single photo. You can start a revolution. For those of you that don't know why Twitter only allows you to have 140 characters, it's because the founders wanted it to be able to be used by anyone, anywhere around the world, whether they had the internet or not. So you can be on Twitter, but only use it by text message if you want. If you text 404 to someone's handle, you will immediately start following them. And if you take a person's handle, a space, and 140 characters, you're left with a maximum amount for one text message. It is technology such as that that enabled the Egyptian revolution several years ago, where Egyptians were able to mobilize and create groups of revolutionaries solely based off of SMS-based Twitter activity. And then you can help others. There are a lot of ways that we can help others using social. I'll get into some more of those as well later. I think that we have this myth in our minds that they always have to be really big, but you can make a small change wherever you're at. Now, I'm no longer working day-to-day in social, so what I do is I donate my services pro bono to nonprofits. One of them is Music Cares, which helps artists get sober as well as pay for their medical bills when they can't afford them. Another thing that I've noticed that's pretty amazing is just how everyday people use social media to change the world. This past week, a page went up called Snowed Out Atlanta, where Atlantans who were stranded or willing to put up their homes created this page and were able to mobilize. There was a mother with a single, with a little boy who was going to be left out in the cold because she had to abandon her car. And she was able to hike 1 mile to a family who put them up for the night because of this page. And I just love this quote down here that says, I want to thank the creator as well as the person who created this page. And then they talk about how they abandoned their vehicle and were able to be put up in a Home Depot for the night. That's amazing, and that wouldn't have happened without social media. Identification. This is a quote from a 2006 thesis I did on globalization in the music industry, and it just talks about, okay, it says MySpace, so you know how old it is right there. The popularity of a site like MySpace and even dating sites illustrate the public's desire for a sense of belonging. The individual or even collectivistic desire to be aligned with a certain scene, combined with the popularity of social networking sites, mean that there are new ways to show you identify. What I was actually talking about when I wrote that, and you're like, why is she putting up an album cover? I'm getting into it. What I was actually talking about when I wrote that was how fans of certain bands were able to show allegiance in a new way with the advent of the internet. In the 80s, if you were a part of the punk movement, you showed your affinity through mohawks and safety pins and docks. If you're a fan of Black Flag, you're getting the tattoo. If you're a fan of Morrissey, you're getting the pompadour, and you're probably Latino and live in LA. And for me, I was a fan of this band called the Cocteau Twins. They absolutely changed my life and wrote this super dreamy post-punk music. And when I was, Tim's like, what's up? We're dating ourselves, people. Hello, everyone over 35. So when I was 19 years old, I was writing music and I was going to Biola University and I decided to drop out. Don't do that. And I was like, and there's a tweet, like, end quote, I dropped out. I decided to drop out of school and move to London because that's where the Cocteau Twins were from. Now, I didn't actually know the band or anyone in London. I just got a work abroad visa. But I met a guy on a Cocteau Twins message board who had the same exact favorite song as me, which of course means I should move into their living room. Which is what I did, and I'm lucky he was not a serial killer. Oh, wait, it gets better. I thought I would show you some really rad visual aids of how weird I looked. You guys, that thrift store dress was like, I thought it was like Gucci. It was like my $1, I'm awesome with my docs and my red hair, socks. It's just a whole thing. But I actually was also able to track down the band and invite them to my show where I was covering their music. Because back in the 90s, bands would put all their information online, their address, their phone number, didn't matter how big they were. And I ended up getting to go to their studio, which was originally The Who's, and play my cover of their song in their studio. And that all happened because of the internet. And when I went on to work at Twitter, it was that sense of magic that I tried to tell artists to instill with their fans. Like, you can give fans the most amazing experience by simply at-replying them. I know you see the inside of a green room and a backstage every day, but to Johnny in Idaho, he never will. So you sharing that photo can change their life. I created a campaign for Alicia Keys where every night of her tour, fans got the opportunity to tweet their section, row, and seat number to hashtag Alicia Dedicates. And then before she went on stage, she would choose a fan to dedicate a song to at night. That's one of the amazing things that the internet has facilitated that we haven't had before. But there's also some not so good things. So this is my hall of shame. When I was growing up and I was pursuing a career as an artist or a journalist, there was this whole thing in my head of having to pay dues. So when I was a struggling music writer, I literally was the kid in the mailroom of the magazine putting on 25,000 labels, going to the post office. Everyone hates you because you've got to mail 25,000 things. And when I was an artist, it meant playing the midnight show at Silver Lake Lounge when no one is showing up and going on tour with this band I was in, Javelina, and like playing to nobody in the middle of nowhere before you get to the one city where there's actually an audience. But I don't see that as much today. When I work with a lot of millennials, I hear things like, and I'm going to create a startup, and then it's going to get acquired by Google, and then I'm going to make 200 mil, and then I'll go to my next thing. And it's just like, what? I mean, you might, but chances are you won't. And sometimes, not to crush all your dreams. And sometimes, it's that same kind of lack of forethought that also approaches how we tweet. We haphazardly send things out or use Facebook or any other social media, sorry, I'm biased, into the universe without thinking of their impact, without thinking that anyone else may hear them. Now, a lot of you probably saw this. If not, let me allow myself to elaborate. Justine Sacco was a PR professional on her way to South Africa who tweeted, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS." Just kidding, I'm white. Unfortunately for Justine, she tweeted that before she got on the plane and had no idea that by the time she landed, Black Twitter was very upset with her. And the hashtag, #HasJustineLandedYet, was trending worldwide. She lost her job. But it's not immune to everyday people. Artists also get in trouble. Madonna has caused quite a stir on Instagram twice this month. One was when she posted this photo of her son Rocco and put, "The party has just begun, bring it, 2014. The problem is he's 13 years old holding Bombay Sapphire while his friends are holding Belvedere and Grey Goose. Or I guess it's both Belvedere, sorry. I don't drink. And then she got upset that people were very upset with her for this photo. In the world of social media today, sometimes what you're actually doing doesn't really matter as the appearance of what people think you're doing, because contempt prior to investigation is unfortunately all too common. And so we have to be mindful about what we're putting out there. Last but not least, and I've done this, so this isn't me, but I'll tell you the story. It's when you log into the wrong account. An agency employee who was managing the Chrysler Autos account tweeted, "I find it ironic Detroit is known as the Motor City and yet no one here knows how to expletive drive." Unfortunately, he was logged into Chrysler Auto when he tweeted that. That was not a good brand move. Home Skillet lost his job. This is being recorded, huh? Is it? Okay, then I'm not going to say who this was, but I'll tell you afterwards. So I used to work at Disney Music Group, and I used to manage a lot of the biggest pop stars in the world's accounts. Okay? Some of them are really famous now, but doing different things, get it? And one day, I was supposed to be logging into the Facebook account of one artist and tweeting about her new single, but unfortunately, I logged into the wrong account and went to another artist and tweeted about, and posted a Facebook post about the wrong single. And you don't want to make 8-year-old girls upset and let them think that you like just crushed all your dreams and the Tooth Fairy isn't real. I had the post taken down within 30 seconds, but there was already 1,000 comments because this artist had over 10 million likes. And I'm being the honest person I am. I told my boss about it, which I shouldn't have done really, because he wouldn't have known. But and he was just like, "Don't let that happen again." But it was like a heart attack feeling for me. It is a horrendous feeling to post through the wrong account, and I hope you never do that. The only other time I felt that is when I was texting while driving and went through a red light and almost got hit by a car. I decided to never do that again. Like I said before, I don't drink. That's because I'm sober, and I used to drink and drive. And that's not a good feeling either. But I have gotten into more close calls from texting and driving than from when I was drinking. So if any of you do that, please, please, please consider your actions. I know there's been so much that's been posted about it and we don't really think about it, but seriously, it could be you. So layers, why did I call my talk layers? And this is gonna be a little bit of a personal thing. Over the past 5 years, I lost my dad to a heart attack. I lost my mom to breast cancer in 2012. I was almost killed in a car accident. I was robbed, I lost my grandma, my brother's best friend died, my nephew's mom got hit by a drunk driver and was put in a coma, and I got sober. That's a lot of stuff in a 4.5 year period. I also saw my career skyrocket in technology. And after my mom died in 2012, it was really hard for me to want to leave the house and for me to want to talk to people. So I retreated into my phone and I retreated into the internet. And I spent a lot of money on Gilt and Hotlook and other shopping sites. And I did this for about 3 weeks before I finally realized what I was doing. And because I'm sober, I don't take anything. I don't take antidepressants. I don't take any sort of even NyQuil. I don't do anything. I'm almost 6 years sober this year. And it was really hard to not take a drink over the loss of my mom, who was my best friend. And what I noticed after 3 weeks of just kind of using way too much tech was that it had created a layer between me and others. I didn't want to connect with my friends. I didn't want to connect with people who I thought might not understand my circumstances. So I put this wall up between me and them. But then it also created a layer between me and myself, because ultimately I was substituting my addiction with alcohol and drugs for an addiction with my phone and technology. I was doing it for the same exact reason. I didn't want to feel what was going on. When we don't want to feel uncomfortable, we will often use technology as a way of diverting that. Have you ever gotten to an elevator and you don't want to talk to the person next to you, so all of a sudden you're like, I'm gonna check my phone, it's so interesting. But it's not that your phone is really interesting, it's that you don't want to have to be present in an elevator with a stranger because, goodness gracious, they might actually talk to you and you could have a human interaction. And lastly, and Angelenos love their space, right? I'm sorry for this photo, but I thought it was cute. It puts a layer between you and God. It's really hard to know God's will if you're not taking any time to actually hear him talking to you. And it's really easy to get in your will when you're just constantly on your phone. I'm going to search WebMD. I'm going to search a psychology site. I'm going to search this. And we get into this habit of thinking that the internet has all the answers. And so after 3 weeks of doing that, I had to stop and I had to delete some apps off my phone and just decide that I was going to feel what was going on. And it was not easy and it was not fun, but I knew it was the only way I was going to get out of it. So I wanted to leave you with some ideas for solution. I'm always into the idea of ending things with solution. Whenever I have a problem and I'm talking to someone about it, I always try to come up with at least 2 or 3 solutions as well that I can bounce off with them, because I think that solutions-based thinking helps us to focus on the positive. Digital detox. TC did this over summer. A digital detox is just a period of time where you decide to abstain off social media. Now, you can Google different ways of doing it, but it doesn't have to be some huge thing where you like shut down your Facebook account. It can be really subtle. For me, a couple years ago, I was going through a breakup, and I found that I was developing this really bad behavior of lurking my ex's new girlfriend, who was on Instagram. Nobody here has ever done that before, I'm sure. You guys seem like really cultivated, mature people. And I had to delete Instagram off my phone because I realized that I was never going to go on there and see anything good. I was never going to see a post from this girl going, I wish I could be as awesome as his ex, you know? Or like some post from him going, I really wish I stayed with that chick, you know, with his new, like, young video vixen girlfriend. I was just going to hurt myself. It was literally just standing up and, like, checking my phone every day and hitting myself in the head. And so I had to delete Instagram off my phone for a good month before I could look at it again and not get affected and not even want to check those profiles. those are small ways of doing digital detox. You know what your hangups are. It could be a gambling site. It could be checking ESPN during church. It could be, you know, someone laughed. Sorry, bro. It could be doing way too much online shopping. Whatever it is, you will know. You might even want to pray about it. And any period of abstinence, I find, can be really helpful. Secondly, and this is a really important one to me, is what's your contribution? When you're using technology, or even in your career every day to day, whether you work in tech or not, what are you giving back? We're so focused on what are we getting that we don't actually think about what we're actually giving. Does the energy of a room change when you come into it? Does the energy of Twitter or Facebook change because of the posts that you're posting? I had to stop being snarky once I started working at Twitter. Like, I can make jokes about Pharrell's hat and stuff, but I could no longer say things like, Madonna looks like an old bat, you know, because sometimes I'd have to work with Madonna a week later. And if I posted that and she saw it, that could be a really bad day for me at work. Now that I work with brands, if I post a negative thing about MasterCard, it could cost my company $250,000 deal. So I have to be really mindful about what I'm posting and why I'm posting it. I also try to make an effort to do uplifting posts. One of the causes that's really dear to my heart is helping women in technology and mentoring women in business. In fact, I spoke at General Assembly just 4 months ago on a Women in Tech talk. Today, I posted a photo of me and some girls that I mentor from East LA. I feel really strongly about equality in the workplace. I've worked in two male-dominated fields of music and tech. And so I try to do posts about what I'm learning and how I'm helping girls in that world so that other people will see that, so that I can change the conversation. And then, you know, Bible verses and Oprah quotes. But every day, I want you to think about what your contribution is. When I'm going into work and I feel a bit of a slump, sometimes I will tell myself, how can I be of service today? How can I earn my salary today? Your salary is not a gift. It is someone expecting something from you every day. So what are you giving them? And I always say to people, if you don't like your job, the best way to get a new one is by being grateful for your current job. It has worked in my career over and over again. And then be present. That's my son, Iggy. Iggy is 4 months old and was rescued with his brothers from a trash can. And if you have children or small pets, they do not care if you are on your phone. They do not care if you're watching TV. They do not care if you're on your computer. They want your full attention, and they need your full attention. And once Iggy came into our lives, I found that I had to slow down and be present on a more regular basis than I was being. I had to get on the floor and play ball with him sometimes and not be on Facebook. I had to make sure that he was fed and just very basic things like that, right? You know, feeding animals, important. But I thought about it and I thought, man, this needs to extend into how I treat my friends. Like, when you're going to dinner with your friends, does it look like an LED convention? Or does it look like people that are actually engaging with one another and helping to create community? I think that one of the reasons that we suffer from a lack of community in places like LA today is because we do not have the ability to be present with one another anymore, because we put so many things in front of us and other people. And so it's just one of the things that I think about on a regular basis, and I'm working on improving. Oh, and one last anecdote. I've made a rule that when I'm on conference calls, I don't do anything except for listen to that conference call. I don't surf the net. I don't write about other things. I don't answer other emails. Partially out of respect for the client, partially so I'll know an answer if someone calls on me, but because it's mostly so I can be present. And it includes when I take meetings with people that I think, oh, this is not going to be an important meeting for business. I stay present and I stay interested. And I've had so many huge business deals happen because of that simple act. So thank you very much, and I hope you got something out of that.